Ray and Sports Talk. Today is Sunday, April 7th. Before we get started, here are a few reminders. We would love to hear from you, and here are several ways to weigh in. Call us at 646-716-5564, or join us in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/Tarvino, or follow us on Twitter at Weigh In Sports. Now here's your host, Brian Tarvin, and co-host Trey Patterson. Let's weigh in.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for listening tonight. Michelle, thanks for the introduction. Glad everyone can make it tonight. Hopefully, we'll have some people joining us in chat. Right now, we have Jonathan and Trey's in chat right now, so I'm sure people will start piling in, hopefully. We are 8:30 tonight, a little bit, 30 minutes earlier than we normally do, but we will shut off at 9:30 to 10 o'clock tonight. But it was a great weekend so far in sports. I got to go to Atlanta and watch the Final Four, first time ever experiencing this. It was a great time. It was just a lot of fun, Trey, seeing all of these fans, how they react to the Final Four. A lot of pressure on the players, coaches, and fans. Did you get a chance to catch any of the action?
Yeah, obviously I caught some of the game for sure, some of the games, actually. And Tarvin, the Final Four hasn't disappointed so far.
No, I mean, it was the first game was to me, you know, I was like, wow, because usually it's the second game that's always the best one. The first game's usually sometimes a snoozer, but Wichita State came to play, Trey, and just like we talked about, this team is not an upset. Like I said, if Wichita State had beaten Louisville last night, in my opinion, it was no upset. Those guys they came to play ball, they're well coached, but let me tell you one thing that they didn't do, and, you know, for a whole two halves in a game against a Louisville team, you know, with Smith in foul trouble, Louisville had to back off that press a little bit till towards the end of the second half. And once that press started going, Trey, they didn't have any ball handlers. They didn't have really an answer for that press, and Louisville just imposed their will, and now they're in the national championship.
Yeah, I mean, I was very impressed with Wichita State. I didn't give them much of an opportunity in this, you know, in that game, Tarvin, but they really impressed me because, you know, against a team that presses and forces a lot of turnovers, Wichita State went a long, long time in that game without turning the ball over at all. So you had to be very, very happy with Wichita State's performance. I mean, I think, you know, that's one of those performances of Wichita State. I mean, they went out and they played about the best game they can possibly play, and, you know, they came very, very close to being the national championship game.
Yeah, but watching the game, as the game started going, they went up by 12, Wichita State did, but you could just tell that Wichita State started looking at that clock. You know, okay, we're up 12. There's 12 minutes left. There's 7 minutes left, and this Louisville started just cutting into the lead. And then all of a sudden, it was just like holding your breath every time you would watch Wichita State try to break that press. But you have to credit Louisville for, I think ESPN said it best last night, is they stuck with their game plan. They did not panic. Rick Pitino did not let his kids panic, and for that reason, they're playing for it. But, hey, this Wichita State team is a very, very physical team. I got to watch them three times in this tournament, and I was very impressed with them every time. So the Wichita State fans, Trey, were amazing, very classy people. I got to talk to several of them. Just real nice people, really humble, unlike the Louisville fans. So, but anyway, good luck to Wichita State, you know, especially like next year. I don't know how long that coach is going to stay, Trey. Do you think he's out?
We'll see. I mean, that guy has to. He's been there. He's won he's been the coach of the year in their conference, I think, three straight years. I think if somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is his third straight year of being his conference is coach of the year. So when you're talking about the Missouri Valley, which is a conference that has basically made noise in the tournament, and this guy's done it three straight years being the coach of the year, you would assume that he'd have been scooped up by now. But Tarvin, I mean, I think now he's going to get pressure definitely to go someplace. I mean, this is without a doubt the best performance that he's put on the court coaching, and, you know, people are going to come calling.
Yeah, you know, one thing, and I don't know if you got to see the call at the end of the game where they called a jump ball, but honestly, after watching that play, it really looked like Smith got some arm in that. I think Wichita State should be shooting free throws. in that situation, but the jump ball gave it to Louisville late. I really wish they would do something about that jump ball rule. I think it's terrible. But other than that, did you have an opinion on that play?
Yeah, I kind of agreed with most everybody. I think you saw it that Wichita State took the worst end of that call. But, you know, watching the most of the game, I didn't look at that game as being – it came down to that call. There was a lot of bad officiating, actually, in that game, I thought, Tarvin. A lot of – I mean, there was just very, very ticky-tack calls early on. And then they basically let them hammer each other for a while. Just the officiating wasn't very consistent. And just a lot of missed calls. So, you know, unfortunately, in a game that big, you had just some very poor, you know, refereeing and officiating.
You know, watching the games live, and, you know, you can't tell. I thought the officials did a real good job. But when I go back and watch the games on high-definition TV on a big screen, I'm with you. I think there was some inconsistent calls. Calls that weren't necessary. You know, why would you call a foul here? Why would you make that call? And we're about to talk about Syracuse and Michigan. You know, that charge at the end of the game, Trey, that they called, I don't know about that.
You and I are both sort of on the anti-charge brigade, at least in this tournament. I mean, that was a much better charge than we saw in the Ohio State game, you know, where, you know, Kraft was clearly moving. This one, I mean, he was a little more set, Tarvin, I'll give him that. To me, you know, I just don't like that call at that point in the game. But, I mean, I don't have as much of a problem with the charge and that particular charge as I did during the Ohio State game.
Yeah, but now I want to go back real quick to Louisville. And that's a team, Trey, that, man, they just look like they haven't been tested all year until this game. And I know what you're going to say, but I feel like I know who you're going to predict for this championship game in a little while. But tell me, how do you see Louisville actually beating Michigan down? Because this Michigan team, Trey, they're physical. They have great guard play. Their big man's playing good ball. The coach knows what's going on. He has great athletes. So in the bench of Michigan, that's one thing you can't overlook as well. So tell me what Louisville's going to have to do to be champion.
Well, sorry, man, let's be honest. I mean, Michigan's been shooting the lights out. I mean, if they come out as hot as they've been, and you know, it seemed to me during the Syracuse game, it was, I guess, midway through the first quarter, or first half, excuse me, and it just seems to me that all of a sudden, the Michigan just flipped a switch, and just, it's like everything they shot was just draining, and it's been that way. You know, you saw that at the very end of the Kansas game, where they were hitting, you know, half-court shots. You know, so Michigan, if they shoot the way they did against, they have been in the tournament, Tarvin, I don't think Louisville wins the game. You know, so it's going to be on Louisville to put a lot of pressure on Hardaway and those guys who are susceptible to give the ball up and force a lot of turnovers. Because, I mean, let's be honest, if Michigan is shooting a three as well as they have been, Tarvin, I mean, Louisville, that's Louisville's weakness. If they get down, they can't shoot the three ball.
Yeah, this is going to be a great matchup to see that Louisville defense against these guards of Michigan and vice versa. But Syracuse last night, Trey, you know, watching this game, when I watched the second one, I mean, Syracuse just came out flat. You know, they hustled and everything, but they weren't as hungry as Michigan. Michigan came out hot just like they did against Florida, you know, last weekend. Not as hot, but they were out to prove a point. But that Michigan lead in the first half really – in my opinion, it was never in question after that. Michigan just held on for dear life. But that Syracuse team had one great run, Trey. That's a team that I didn't think would make it to the Final Four. I knew they were dangerous. But, I mean, you got to give your hats off to Jim Boeheim and company. I mean, those guys played good, fair, with 22 points last night. I mean, he played an amazing game. But one player for Michigan that stepped up that he hasn't stepped up in a while is Hardaway Jr., hit some big three-point shots, Trey. Without Hardaway hitting some of those threes, they never win that game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the key. I mean, Michigan seems to get it from just about everybody. I mean, their backup point guard, their backup four, I mean, you name it. These guys are all getting quality minutes in for Michigan. And that's the, you know, that's where we could see where his injury being so big is. Without those key minutes from point guard, I think it actually affected Louisville more than folks were willing to admit. I mean, the whole freaking game was all caught up in, you know, the injury, but what we really weren't focusing on was what it actually meant to the club and the rotation that Rick Pitino had. I think we saw an effect, Tarbin, from that game without Ware in the lineup.
Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, this is a game, Trey, for both benches. It's going to come down to the benches. I mean, which bench is going to come up and actually produce the most? These are the two best benches in the game, don't you think? I mean, they developed them all year. Wichita State, you know, played it good too. But if you look at Michigan, they're going to have to get some help off the bench in order to, you know, stay up with that Louisville press. Because I have a feeling, unless they get in foul trouble, Louisville's going to be bringing the heat to Michigan. They're going to prove that. I mean, this is great. When you have guards like this, Trey, for both sides, this caliber, I mean, honestly, there's nobody on the court can stay with Smith. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, certainly Smith, I mean, is really good. I mean, we saw basically how you frustrate him, though, which Tulsa did a pretty good job of defending him. So, you know, here's the, you know, you saw that sort of blueprint, and now just, you know, what does Pitino do with him to make sure that Michigan doesn't bottle him up? Because I think, Harmon, if he struggles the way he did the very first part of that Wichita State game, I think Michigan goes up way too big for Louisville to come back.
Yeah, I totally agree. And tell me about Michigan right here, Trey. If Michigan wins this game, wins the championships, are they, you know, do they have more of a legacy than the Fab Five? You know, I know the Fab Five changed basketball, you know, put Michigan back on the map. I mean, they won a championship right before that, but changed basketball. So what, do you think more of this team winning a championship with these kind of teams, or do you think more of the Fab Five, actually?
So I think more of this team because, I mean, to me it's much harder to win in this tournament because there are so many good teams that you don't expect. I mean, look at Wichita State, what they were willing to, you know, able to do in this tournament. It just proves there are so many more quality teams now. The talent is dispersed greatly, you know, among, you know, smaller schools. So I think, you know, winning this, and that's why it's so hard. You know, you don't have those teams that win 4 out of 5 years. You don't have those teams that go on decade-long runs anymore. You know, when it comes to going to the Final Four, it's just rare, Tarvin. It's just, so when you can win it all, you can cut down the nets nowadays. I think that's a much bigger accomplishment than what the, you know, the Fab Five, you know, coming down to the court and watching Chris Webber call the timeout. I mean, you know, that, to me, that's a better accomplishment.
Well, those guys did make it to two straight championships in a row, especially that one as freshmen. I'm still, even with a Michigan win right here, I'm still with the Fab Five. I know they lost, but, I mean, they lost to Duke, which was one of the best tournament teams of all time, actually, with Leitner and Hurley and those guys. And then they lost to North Carolina, a very good squad with a lot of NBA talent. So it's not like they just choked. Weber did choke, by the way. You're right about that. But I'm talking about as a team in general. Those guys play with a lot of poise. So I'm going to be a little different with you on that opinion, Trey. I'm still going to – I'm going with the 92 Michigan team, really, and the 93.
Well, I'll have to agree to disagree. Michigan, I think cutting down the nets is always better than – you know, I think Buffalo Bills fans would take one championship during their four straight Super Bowl runs rather than being at the Super Bowl four straight years.
I know. But, I mean, it was just something special about it. I was growing up back when the Fab Five came in, and those they were actually at the game last night at the Final Four. So I asked Weber how much money that he got paid by that booster. He didn't answer me. I tried to get an interview with him. But anyway, but it's going to be a great game. The only thing is I'm going to the game tomorrow night. It starts at 9:30 Eastern. Well, that's a late game, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you're on the East Coast, I mean, this is, you know, it seems like they get later and later each year, whether it's Monday Night Football or whether it's a tournament. You know, if you're on the West Coast, it's certainly, you know, it's a little bit better, so you're not having to start games off in the middle of the day, but, you know, it seems like they are getting later, Tarvin.
Yeah, so I'm excited to go. I mean, there's just so many people there, man. I mean, you'd be surprised how many people were at that Final Four that wasn't representing a team, just like me, just there to watch and enjoy it. So tomorrow night will be the test. I mean, will Wichita State, will Syracuse fans stay and watch that championship, Trey, or are they going to scalp their tickets?
I think a lot of them will probably scalp. But, you know, you bought the tickets, you're there in Atlanta. I'd say why not go?
Yeah, there was just so many people, man. God. I mean, it was some. I was trying to sneak down to the lower level, but it wasn't going to happen. especially when maybe tomorrow night I can if it's not full. But it's a great place. But Trey, going to a champion, going to a Final Four, championship game, or any basketball game in a football dome. And Dan Alley said this last night on Facebook. They shouldn't play it in big venues like that. And I agree. I like it tighter for basketball games. It's more loud. When you're in a Georgia dome that big, it's just not as noisy to me. It might be the players down there, but it just takes away a little bit of the game. Do you prefer a larger court or a smaller one?
Well, I think for home crowd advantage, you want a smaller court. But I think when it comes to that, I mean, they're looking at drawing in money. They're looking at, you know, the spectacle of the event. And, you know, the crowd noise is probably, you know, a little bit secondary when it's coming to the folks who are paying the bills.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to go ahead and predict it, Trey. I'm predicting Michigan tomorrow night to take down the mighty Louisville Cardinal and just finish this run that they started. You know, I mean, this has been an amazing journey for Michigan. You know, win or lose, what a great season, you know, they've had. I mean, who thought Michigan, out of all the Big Ten teams that were good this year, would be the one in the championship game? I never thought of that.
Well, you know, Carmen, as crazy as it seems, you know, there's actually somebody in our bracket with Michigan winning it all.
Michigan, Louisville,
they actually, well, they had Syracuse in the Final Four as well. So, you know, that's a pretty incredible picking, even if you're a Michigan fan. I mean, you had them up against Syracuse, and the only Final Four team that guy missed was Wichita State, which I don't think, you know, I'm not going to fault a guy for not picking the one that nobody had. So, you know, somebody thought it, Tarvin, but yeah, you're right.
Well, hold on, Trey. Justin Hawk in the chat room is begging me to go ahead and pick Louisville because everyone's been picking against them all year, which I did pick Michigan last night. So, Justin, just for you, baby. I'm changing my pick to Louisville, Trey, just for a big Michigan fan and Justin. I don't want him to be mad at me if Michigan chokes tomorrow night because I picked him. So, Justin, I'm going on the Louisville bandwagon. We're good now. You guys will win a national championship. But I need you to mail me some money in the mail, though, okay? It's just like a bet. But anyway, I think Jonathan's on the line. See if he wants to weigh in real quick about this championship game tomorrow night. What's up, Jonathan?
I think tomorrow night we could witness one of the best championship games in recent memory. I pray this isn't a repeat of last year's blowout. A lot of people have Kentucky just running right through Michigan. I think that's inaccurate. I think Peyton Siva and Russ Smith play too out of control. I think they'll get into foul trouble, which is what hurt them against Wichita State, and that's what hurt Syracuse against Michigan. And I think Michigan keeps this game extremely close, especially with McGarry coming along as well as he has. What a great diaper dandy he's trying to be. Trey Burke, though, needs to get control of that shot. He could hit water if he fell out of the boat right now.
Yeah, he's so inconsistent. I mean, most superstars don't go a whole half without scoring, really, almost. And then they come in and put 20 up in the second half, But Trey Johnson's right. They're going to have to get more consistent play out of him. Maybe he's holding back for the championship. I don't know.
Well, I mean, Trey Burke, you're talking about the national player of the year, and he really hasn't been the guy who's been the name that everyone's talking about in the tournament. It's actually McGarry. You're talking about a former bench player who has now been the star of this tournament for Michigan. So they've gotten to this far, I mean, without really the National Player of the Year, the Wooden Award winner. I mean, this is a guy who really didn't show up against Syracuse. I mean, honestly, I mean, he was missing free throws down the stretch. So if they get a good-sized contribution from him, I mean, look out, because these other dudes from Michigan are really playing at a high level. So if you can get your superstar involved, I mean, this could be trouble for Louisville, Tarp.
Yeah, exactly. And, guys, I have to tell you something honestly about some of the crowd interactions I had last night. Michigan fans and Wichita State fans were very humble, great fans last night, but it was the Syracuse Louisville fans that were just terrible attitudes, and my God, I was hoping both of them lost. I was pulling for Wichita State and Michigan last night, but the guys, Michigan, I mean, those fans, guys, they traveled so well. They showed class for Michigan. But that Louisville team, man, it reminds me of Alabama sometimes, Jonathan, with their fans.
Oh, well, that's a given. Yeah, I can agree with that. I mean, Alabama fans can just be downright terrible people. Harvey Updike, anybody?
Yeah, I mean, it was just like I love seeing different fan bases like that because, I mean, these guys, and it's probably because Wichita State hasn't been in so long in Michigan, but Syracuse hasn't been in 10 years to a Final Four. But I didn't want to see Louisville-Syracuse a rematch. I think that game would have gotten ugly again. You know, Louisville would have probably run them out of the building. But this Michigan team has enough, I mean, has enough with guard play they have. And the big man, I'm still not a huge fan of him. What's his name, McCreary? What's his name, the center for Michigan?
McGarry.
I mean, I'm just still not sold on him all the way. I know y'all are. But he needs a big game tomorrow night. And if he can continue to hit that shot from the elbow, Louisville's going to give it to him. If he can continue to nail that, Michigan will be holding that trophy tomorrow night. So it's going to be fun. I hope Jonathan's right, Trey. I hope this is one of the best in history because I'll be very excited, you know, to be there for that game. I will not be leaving early. So it'll be a great one to remember. So, guys, let's change gears a little bit. Let's talk a little NFL action just for a minute before we get into baseball. I don't know if y'all heard about this. And tell me, I'll start with you, Jonathan. The NFL, actually, there's four players in the NFL that are going to come out right before the season starts and announce that they are gay. Have you heard this?
Yeah, Brendan Ayup, I just got cut by the Super Bowl champions, can't keep his lid shut. If he wasn't married, I'd question which team he's swinging for. But in all honesty, he needs to shut up. If these gay players are going to come out, let them come out on their own. To do it right before the season starts, I think would be a huge distraction. That's just a media grab. If you're going to do it now while there's nothing else going on in football. That'd be the best time. And then it would be forgotten by the time the season starts. I mean, we've already seen some former players coming out. I mean, I'm pretty sure, you know, y'all remember Kwame Harris getting arrested for beating up his boyfriend, you know, the week leading up to the Super Bowl, and everybody kind of scratched their head and said, wait a second, the 6'6", 300-pound tackle used to play for the Niners? Yeah, well, we don't need somebody coming out before the season starts. It'll be a huge distraction. It'll remind me of the New York Jets.
But Trey, tell me, why would you do that? Does it matter whether you're heterosexual or homosexual? That's your job in the NFL is to play football and to lead your team to victory. Why would you come out and actually announce this? What does it matter?
Well, you know, announcing it publicly, you know, may be different, but you know, I mean, here's the point: is why should anybody have to hide it? You know, I mean, if you're an open and gay player, why should you have to feel like you're in the closet just because you play football? I mean, you know, I mean, do the heterosexual guys or do they not go out and, you know, party and flaunt it? I mean, I'm sure they're dudes who do both. So, you know, the point is like, if a guy wants to be open about it, he should be. You know, holding a press conference might be a different story because, you know, that could be a distraction, but. You know, that, you know, you could also see where this could be a big move, you know, a big moment for, you know, people who are homosexual and see the NFL as a barrier, yeah. You know, one of, just like the military was.
Well, we talked about this with Sonny and Cuervo today on That Being Said this morning, and it was brought up. But, look, this is the NFL, and when I'm thinking of this, when I heard about this, I thought of the show Playmakers. Do you remember that show that came on ESPN, Jonathan and Trey?
Yeah, briefly.
Yeah, when the guy came out, and, you know, his team, you know, they didn't like this, and they beat him half to death in practice, you know, off-the-field issues. And I think in the public eye, these guys will be okay with it. But I think there's going to be a big problem in the locker room with this because 95% of the NFL players are homophobic, guys. This is a man's game, the NFL is. They're not going to like it. I'm not with it or against it, guys. I'm not sitting there saying it's wrong. But I'm saying this could cause division with a team because, I mean, I know, Trey, you said this in the military. You know some guys probably like that. But in the NFL, it's just a little different. It's more of a man sport, you know. And I think it's going to cause some problems, Jonathan. I just don't think they need to come out and just say this, because you don't see guys coming out just, you know, calling a press conference to say they like women, you know. So why do these guys have to come out and say they're homosexual?
Well, you know, this is part of that whole, you know, we live in an attention-grabbing age and everybody wants their name in the headlines, yada, yada, yada. Net-net, you know, whether you like women, whether you like men, whether you like both, I could care less. You're getting paid $2 million to go make a play, go make the play. I don't care who you marry on the side. That has no consequence towards me. But I really do think that Brandon, you know, whatever his last name is, really needs to stop trying to come across as he's the gay player activist. Because this is, it's really, you know, he even said Baltimore cut him because of it. Baltimore said, no, we cut you because you're a special teamer and we can replace you with a 22-year-old rookie. All right, he needs to go find a corner, sit in it, and shut up. Because I don't want to hear no more out of him. Next time I want to hear about a gay football player, better come from the gay player's mouth.
Yeah, I don't think you should be a gay spokesman unless you are gay. And you know what? It's right. I don't care if you're gay, if you're not, it shouldn't matter. You're a human being. You have a right to do what you do. But what's going to happen, the problem is these guys come out and say this, what's it going to be like in the shower, Trey? You know, after a ball game, you're getting a shower. And this is, I mean, just tell me what you think what it'll be like. You know, when you're in the military, you do it. So how would you feel if you knew someone was like that and they were in the shower with you? How would you feel?
Well, I mean, first off, just because people are gay doesn't mean they're, you know, they're trying to check every single person out around them
I'm talking about every single female. I'm talking about just in general what I feel like the players will feel, like just in the
right.
real world, how these players are going to respond.
Well, I mean, here's the argument that you're kind of proposing for the NFL. It's the same argument that was used in the military for, and I'll start it back, Tarvin. This was the first argument was used back when they wanted to integrate the service. Back when they wanted to have, you know, black people come into the service, and well, it's going to be terrible for the unit. You know, what's the unit going? What's the platoon going to do? What's the squadron going to do? You know, this is going to cause anarchy. Well, the thing is, it didn't. I mean, yeah, there were incidents. Yeah, there were brush ups. Yeah, there had to be something handled. But it was able to move on, and then, you know, the unit adapted. Now they said the same thing about women, and then now they're saying the same thing. They said the same thing about gays and lesbians in the military, and I honestly haven't seen any bit of difference. I mean, yeah, people are now open about it, but, I mean, so what? They can work on it. They can, you know, turn a wrench on a jet just like anybody else can.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. In a football locker room, the only thing that's different, Tarvin, that I see about that is that, you know, sometimes these players should be there for a year or two, so there's a little less time for, you know, them to build that camaraderie. But what I'm more interested about, Tarvin, is the only thing that really matters is how does the ownership for a team come down in this? So you have an openly gay player who comes out. Does your ownership come out and say, hey, fantastic, we support him. If you don't like it, you can go play for somebody else so we can cut you, you know. Because, I mean, your star athletes aren't going to be the guys who are going to be, you know, being very vocal. I mean, Tom Brady's not going to come out and say, hey, I'm not going to play with a gay wide receiver. That's not going to happen. It's more than likely going to be your second string linebacker making a big stink. So, I mean, what does the owner do? Does he get rid of the gay guy? Who just announced or to get rid of the second-string linebacker? And that's where we're going to see choices starting.
If they want a lawsuit, you know, they'll get rid of the gay individual. I don't think they'll want to. It's all going to be behind the scenes. And I don't mind if you're gay, you're gay. That's up to you. That's your choice. But I don't think you need to come on TV and announce it. Who gives a crap who you like to do on the weekend? I don't. I could care less. I'm sure your team doesn't care either. So just shut your mouth. Keep it to yourself, just like everybody else does. And it won't be any drama. It's just like these guys want attention. They want to get the spotlight on them. And Trey, from what I'm hearing, it's like a press conference. These four individuals are going to come out together as one unit and do it. So I'm just wondering who it is actually.
Well, and you got to also think is, you know, anytime there's the first of anything, it is a big deal. I mean, what we should do is these guys just come out and announce, and we should say, hey, that's awesome. The NFL has had a bunch of gay players, and it's great that we can now, in today's society, not care. And that's what really needs to happen. But you know, once you get, you had so many anti-gay players, you know, homophobic players who've been making press conferences, you know, statements, and, you know, it all came about when the military, you know, Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, and so eventually some sports reporter asked some NFL player, hey, what do you think would happen if, you know, a gay player came out in the NFL? And that's when you started seeing all the rhetoric from very homophobic dudes. That's why I think the response is from guys who may be gay in the NFL, who may have been living with it for years, decided, hey, look, man, I'm gonna come out for the cause to show that gay people have been in the NFL and playing at a very high level.
Well, but guys, hold on, Jonathan. You see these guys, you know, like people won't say much about it if they won't care. Look at Rutgers head coach, basketball coach, the way he would call his team some derogatory comments about being homosexual and things. And this is Rutgers. This is a great school with educated people that talk to people like that. What do you think the average person is going to – the average IQ person, Jonathan, is going to react to this? I mean, this could be bad.
Well, and that's why I say if you're going to come out now, because odds are the fans are going to forget by the time training camp starts. So I'm more worried about the nut job fans than I am with teammates. I think teammates will accept you no matter what. All right, you know, that's just a fact of life. You understand you have to trust each other. Okay, and you know, I hate that this is happening, but to talk about the Rutgers thing, you realize gay rights activists. Groups in New Jersey are suing the school over what he said pertaining to gay individuals who weren't actually gay, just his statements, his slanderous words. I mean, this is getting out of hand.
Yeah. And guys, I'm going to keep following this. We'll follow this and see if we hear any more stories on it. But I just want y'all to know, us three here at Way In Sports, we're not speaking against any kind of gay person or anything. That's their choice. We just want to be honest to let you know what the players are going to feel like, just like Cuervo did this morning and Sonny, what we feel like the reaction is going to be, you know, in the real world. But before we move on to baseball, guys, Nebraska Cornhuskers, I mean, Bo Pelini won a lot of points with me, guys, yesterday. 7-year-old brain cancer child, Jack Hoffman, he ran, what was it, a 69-yard touchdown. They let him do a scrimmage yesterday with him. Trey, I don't know if you got to see this, but the kid went 69 yards for a touchdown. Probably one of the most classiest things I've ever seen in college football.
Yeah, Tarp, I didn't see it, and it was awesome. It was awesome.
Jonathan, what did you think?
It made me tear up. It was one of the best moments I have seen. This is why college football is just so ding-dang special, guys. I mean, and it all started with Rex Burkhead last year. Jack, was wearing a Rex Burkhead replica uniform. Rex Burkhead had the Team Jack, wristband that he wore through the games last year. And, you know, the athletic director and the fullback for Nebraska, both their names escaped me. But they both said, hey, why don't we do this? And they reached out to the kid's father, and the kid's father was like, I don't know how he'll feel about getting in front of all those people. And they're like, well, let's bring him on the sideline and we'll ask him right before the play. And he was all about it, and the team, the way they did it was amazing. And it's just fantastic. And for all the negativity that is surrounding college sports with the whole Rutgers incident and the Auburn thing and all that, just to see something like this, to take all that negativity away and realize that is going to be the top play on SportsCenter for the next 100 years.
Yeah, 60,000, over 60,000 watch this, and I believe we have Nathan Walters on the line now. Nathan, you're on Way In Sports. What's going on?
Hey, Brian, how are you? It's been a long, long time.
I know it. How are you, sir? Did you get to go to the game yesterday?
You know, I did not. I got off work for it, and something came up down here in Texas, and I was taking care of my son yesterday. But we did get to watch the game. It was nationally televised on the Big Ten Network, and so it was really, really nice. We got together. Another Nebraska fan down here, myself, we went and watched it, and we were actually there with a was on TV. We watched it with a young lady. She's from Syracuse, New York. And she said, you know, she doesn't know much about football. But when she saw that happen, she said that she's a Nebraska fan forever just because of that. And, you know, that really means a lot. And as was mentioned, you know, it's been a really, really, really tough week for collegiate athletics. And this is a big thing. It's really nice that it comes out of, you know, my statehood university and everything. It could come from anywhere, really. It could come from the University of Texas, which is well known that I am not a huge fan of, and I would still say that this is the classiest move that I've ever seen. It's the best touchdown run that I've ever seen in my entire life, and it, you know, it means a lot to Jack Hoffman, because Jack he's about an hour and a half where he lives from where my family is up in Northeast Nebraska. And so, you know, we all of us in Nebraskans, we have a special connection because there aren't very many of us, and knowing that and seeing that, and it was really awesome, and it means a lot. Of course, this isn't the first time that Jack has been to the stadium. He led the Nebraska team out on the tunnel walk last year against Wisconsin, and when Nebraska wore their alternate uniforms, and he was also joined by a young boy by the name of Isaiah Casillas, and he also had pediatric brain cancer. Isaiah actually passed away in December from his plight, and so this is a huge thing to get more and more research done for this rare disease. Sure, but there's very little that's known about it.
Yeah, but you know that run, guys. I don't know if you really watched it. This kid had moves. I mean, he had bursts of speed. I mean, it was awesome to see. And guys, look, college football used to be pure. I remember back when I was a kid, maybe it wasn't. Maybe I was naive. But when I watched this, it made me think about, like, the Auburn crap going on, the drugs, the cheating, the Rutgers coach cussing people, hitting them. Man, look at this kid. I mean, that's pure. This is pure love of the game and being a kid. And I hope everybody that watched that got as much out of that as I did. Because, you know, hey, I'll be pulling for Nebraska this year. You know, I'll be rooting them on Martinez, Burkhead, all of them. Burkhead's gone, but even Pelini, I might root for him for allowing that to happen, because you're right, Nathan, that was probably the best touchdown run I've ever seen, no doubt.
Yeah, and you know, it really kind of shed some light, because what do people see a lot with Bo Pelini on the sidelines? And it's this jerk, if you will, you know, that people don't know his true demeanor. And they don't know what he's really like for his players. And, of course, now, of course, Rex Burkhead going, moving on to the NFL. People have said that no matter if they hate the team or not, they'll go watch Rex Burkhead play for the NFL team. And, you know, it's done a lot. And, of course, the names, the football operations director was Jeff Jamrog, and the fullback was named Zimmerer, C.J. Zimmerer. They're the guys that got it together there for Jack there on the sidelines. And I tell you what, if nothing else, you can go to and Google it, Team Jack, you know, and you can do so much just by looking and seeing what you can do to get more of this out there, because he's not the only patient. You know, there's hundreds and thousands more. It's just, it's been so rare that people didn't further the research since the 1970s. And so now we're, you know, moving on. This has been the second year now that we've University of Nebraska has helped out with this. And, you know, I look forward to seeing it more. I look forward to seeing more universities get more involved. They have the Uplifting Athletes. That's a huge foundation. And I look forward to it happening more and more and more, because, when, like you said, Brian, when you and I were children, we were so naive about the game of football. And yep, what we saw were these athletes that were superheroes to us, and how much it does for these children when athletes go visit them in the hospital and then things like this happen. I look forward to seeing it more and more. Because as I saw on the YouTube video, which has got like almost a million hits already in 24 hours, it's like people saying, this is giving me just a glimmer of hope with the human race, and I just hope we see it more and more.
Yeah, and Nathan, buddy, I appreciate the call, and don't be a stranger anymore, man. We need you to keep calling in. You have a great knowledge of football, sports in general, so don't be a stranger, buddy. And, man, that was touching. Every time I see that, I just tear up, because I know how much it meant to that kid. You know, being sick, brain cancer. I mean, the most courageous person out on that field was that little kid running the football. I mean, he doesn't know what cancer is, really. He doesn't understand. He's just out there to have fun and to play with his idols that he loves to watch every Saturday. So kudos to Nebraska, guys. Y'all did a great job. If Popolini, congratulations for being a good man. So let's move on over, guys, to the Major League Baseball for just a few minutes. We're going to break down as much as we can, but, hey, I'll start out by saying, hey, the Atlanta Braves, guys, what's up with Atlanta, Trey? I mean, are these guys for real right now, or is it just too early to tell? I'm really liking what I'm seeing out of these Upton brothers.
Well, I think a lot of it is, I think the Braves are going to be very good this year. I think it's always too early to tell. I mean, Colorado is 4-1. I'm not sure that's going to hold up. But, I mean, there's a lot of things early in the season that you can start to look at. And you know, some players do start breaking out very early, and while others don't. I mean, I think, to be honest, Justin Upton is going to have a huge year, Tarvin. I really do. I'm still a little bit hesitant to say that, you know, B.J. Upton is going to be seen more than what we've seen of him than he was with the Tampa Rays, which is a guy who hits about 20 home runs, strikes out about 160 to 160 times, and bats below 250. That seems to be what B.J. Upton is. So I'm not so sure that that's going to change, Tarvin, but, you know, I think Justin Upton could be up for a big breakout season.
So, Jonathan, looking at the 5-1 Atlanta Braves record, I don't know if you really are buying the Atlanta Braves right now at 5-1 because you have Washington right behind them. I mean, you know, the favorites to win this division. What is it going to take for Atlanta to keep this up? They're averaging about 5 runs a game right now. If they can keep doing that, they're going to win a lot.
Well, first off, they need to play Chicago every game. come on now. All right, let's start here. B.J. Upton, as much as I loved him with Tampa Bay Ray, his defensive presence in center field was by far best in the game. Okay, 25 home runs, 30 stolen bases. Those were easy milestones for him, and he always turned it up, you know, after the All-Star break. Now, here's something that many people don't understand is that B.J. Upton right now is 3-for-20. He has that one home run, which is his only RBI. He has 9 strikeouts. Jason Hayward is 2-for-20 with one home run, 7 strikeouts.
All right. Man, he can't hit.
I mean, Freddie Freeman was just put on the DL, and he's very, very, very aggravated right now that he was put on the DL without being consulted about his injury. You have Dan Uggla, who, let's face it, the ugly Uggla is going to bat between 220 and 250, probably jack about 20 out, but that's about it. He's going to strike out north of 150. Simmons is a shortstop where he's not a proven hitter. He's just there because he can play great defense, and you still have a whole third base. So to say Atlanta can keep this up is not out of this realm because they have – a very, very, very good pitching staff. But I honestly believe when it's too early. I mean, Buster Posey is batting about 200. Matt Kemp's looking terrible. Robinson Cano's 2-for-18. I mean, you know, these are guys that haven't really warmed up yet. It's too early in the season for me to anoint anybody. Other than Houston, who I think Houston and Miami, both I think we can safely say will be battling for the number one overall pick and in the draft.
Yeah. Well, the thing about the Braves guys is, you know, to make the playoffs for this long 167 games, whatever. What is it, 167 or
162?
Okay,
162.
Yeah, okay, two. So I'm off a game. Okay. But look, the pitching, the starting pitching of Atlanta is what concerns me a little bit. The bullpen, best in the game. I'm not worried about that. Kimbrel can knock them down easy. And I just worry about their starting pitching, Trey. How many innings will the Atlanta starters have to go every game in order to keep that bullpen fresh? Because a couple of years ago, we saw the bullpen lights out the first half, but the second half they wore out.
Well, I mean, yeah, you have to have – Your back end guys when they're as young as they are. I mean, and I would be worried about the bullpen situation with Vendors, who's such a key part of that. What they had last year on the DL, you know, does he come back and is he as effective as he was in previous, you know, seasons? But you know, obviously, I like the fact that Walden is out of that bullpen now. They got him from Anaheim. He's great. The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, and that's a great addition they have. But, you know, the starters do need to eat up some innings, Tarvin, and that's going to be it's going to be an issue because, you know, you got Tim Hudson who's aging. You know, you got a new rookie coming in, and Tehran, or however you can say his name. He's going to have to – I mean, I don't see him going past five innings a lot. So, you know, you're going to be taxing that bullpen again, and then, you know, when it comes down to the stretch run, you know, how are they going to feel?
Exactly. And the Braves, look, the Nationals are for real, guys. And last year they were that team that didn't sneak up on people because some people had a wild card, some people had the division. Those guys are good. But the team I'm looking at in this division, the Phillies are already 2-4, but the Mets 4-2, Jonathan. I think the Mets, you know, they could be that sneaky team this year like the Nationals were last year. Any chance the Mets can do this?
Well, the Mets are an interesting team because you look at the Mets and you see what should be, by all rights, a very weak pitching staff. But Nice, Harvey, and Gee are actually three pretty good pitchers. The back end of the rotation is a little weak. The relievers are terrible other than Parnell. I don't trust if LaTroy Hawkins is your setup man, there's an issue. Okay, and between Ike Davis and Lucas Duda, you might be talking 40 home runs, but you're also talking a combined 200 average. You know, I don't know if David Wright can carry this team the whole way, and it'll be interesting to watch the Mets, but the New York Mets, even if they're somewhere around the lead, in the, you know, around the playoff race in September, they'll choke it away. I mean, it's, you know, you can't start changing the rules of the game now. The Mets always have to choke.
Trey, looking at the Mets, do you think they could actually have enough to make a wild card? I really don't, but I'm just seeing what you think about them because some people are saying the Mets are that team, but I'm just not buying it just yet.
Well, given the fact that, you know, there are two wild cards now, Tarvin, and given the fact that the Miami Marlins are going to give up a lot of wins in the division, I think the Mets could be a wild. You could have, I mean, here's the thing about the Marlins and the Astros is, you know, how far to the bottom do they go? Because, you know, that's going to really affect the wild card races, Tarvin. You know, I mean, if they're that bad and they stay that low, then these division guys are going to feast on them. They're going to get a lot of wins, and that they're going to make up ground in the wild card. So is it possible the Mets turn the wild card at the end of the year? I say absolutely, Tarvin. They're going to be in the hunt. I think they're going to be picking up a lot of games against the Marlins that while, you know, say that NL West is a much tougher division and, you know, facing the Colorado Rockies is going to be a lot harder than facing the Miami Marlins. So if you're, you know, and looking at that, Tarvin, I think the Mets are going to be in there. Do I think they're going to – I don't have them in the playoffs, though, Tarvin. I don't have them winning a wild card spot, though. But I think they're going to be up there.
All right, let's go to the Central, guys. Just looking at the Central, you know,
who are you picking for the division winner, Tarvin?
I'm picking the Atlanta Braves for the division winner of the East, and some of it's being a fan. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a diehard Braves fan or anything, but I do go to a lot of the games. And just looking at it, they're young, guys, and there's a chemistry about this team. I know we're only six games into the season, but the youth of this team will help them in ways. It will hurt them in ways. But I think they have enough veterans on that team, especially pitching, to be able to get over the hump. Can Beachy come back? Can he be effective? That's a question. But, look, I like these guys. I mean, I really think there's a camaraderie there. And I'm going to pick them to win the division. I know, Trey, I know who you're going to pick.
I'm going Washington Nationals. And you'll see more about that when we talk about some of the future stars and, you know, this year who may break out and actually win an award at the end of the year. But I think, you know, Strasburg with no innings limit is going to be a nightmare for teams down the stretch. And I really think that this team is just one of the more solid all-around teams from, you know, from their frontline starter to their back-end setup guy. You know, even some of their bench players are really good key players, so I think that this is not going to be a runaway division, Tarvin. I'm not saying the Nationals are that far ahead of the Atlanta Braves, but I'm just saying that I think that they're a little bit better of a complete team right now.
Yeah, you're right. And plus having that ace like Strasburg, it really means a lot when you start talking wins and losses. Jonathan, who are you picking?
I'm taking the Washington Expos.
Is Vladimir Guerrero playing?
Well, he better be.
All right, guys, I'm down 2-1 now. So the Braves, you mark it down, they will get in the playoffs. Will it be a wild card or division winner? Well, we shall see. But I don't want to go too much more on this division. But the Phillies, you know, everybody thought that, you know, they would bounce back right now. I know it's early, 2-4. It seems like they're on that same road they were, you know, last year. They've been outscored by 16 runs so far in 6 games, Trey. Do you think, you know, Doc Holliday can get back to his normal self and help these guys get in the playoffs?
Nah, I think the Phillies are going to finish just over the Marlins in the bottom of this division.
Ooh. Jonathan?
Well, the Phillies' problem isn't just Doc. It's also Cole Hamels, who is a 10.87 ERA right now. And let's not forget Ryan Howard is the black hole of strikeouts at first base, plus no outfield help. Yeah, I think the Phillies will be battling the Mets for third if they're lucky.
Yeah, you know, Ryan Howard reminds me of Serrano, but just being left-handed, you know, throwing the deuce, and he's going to swing and miss every time, it seems like. So the Phillies, I'm with you guys. I just don't think they're going to – I don't know if they'll – I think they'll finish above the Mets. I think it's going to be Atlanta, Washington, Philly, the Mets, and Miami. No way Miami can come back. They're already out of it. They might as well just quit. I'm sure their fans won't be attending. But let's move over to the Central Division. And, guys, this is a weak division in my opinion. I just don't think it's that strong. I mean, Pittsburgh is supposed to be back this year. They're 1-5. Milwaukee, 1-5. The Cubs, 2-4. I know Cuervo's a big Cubs fan. He's online listening. But the rest, I think it's between the Reds and St. Louis, guys. And I'm gonna go with St. Louis in this division just because, you know, that's just who I'm flipping a coin right now to do. I really don't like either Cincinnati or St. Louis. I'm not very impressed with them, Jonathan. Who do you like coming out of this division?
Oh, Cincinnati by far. Their lineup is just absolutely ridiculous between Chu and Bruce and Phillips and Frazier, who's been phenomenal, and Votto. You know, it's just a stacked lineup. Losing Ludwig hurt, but it's not going to kill them. And their staff is phenomenal. They have arguably one of the, you know, well, I wouldn't say the best, but definitely a top five bullpen. And they have a great closer. Cincinnati, you know, the St. Louis doesn't have the pitching that they usually have. And that'll be their downfall towards the end of the year. They're relying on these young guys who are already showing that they're weak.
So tell me, does a wild card come out of this division at all?
No.
I agree. I don't think so. Trey, who do you like in this division and why, and will a wild card come out of?
Yeah, Jonathan kind of hit it on the head. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, I took guys like Frazier in my fantasy baseball draft. I mean, there's a lot of players on this team who are so undervalued and really aren't household names, but they're really good. I mean, yeah, Frazier, I think he hit 3 or 4 bombs in the opening week, and then this guy is really, really good third baseman. You know, they picked up Chu. I mean, and the fact that Chapman said, you know, I want to be a closer, shows you where not only do they have a dude throwing 101 just straight darts out of the bullpen, but a guy who actually wants to be in that role. You know, this isn't a guy, one of these, you know, starters who is sort of, you know, has to be a closer. This is a guy who wants to be the closer for this team, and that's a powerful statement. Dudes, I mean, the Reds are going to run away with this division. This is going to be by far the easiest division to call, Tarvin, and I don't think a wild card comes out. You kind of hit it. You got Milwaukee, the Cubs, and the Pirates, who I think are going to be out of it by All-Star break. I think the Cardinals are going to float around for the wild card for a while just because they're a pretty good overall team, but they're going to have too many, I think, injury concerns. I don't think their starting pitching is going to be able to overcome some of the deficits they have in the bullpen. And the Cardinals are also a team that has holes throughout their lineup as well. And I'm not sold on Alan Craig and some of these guys as long term. So I think the Reds run away with it, Tarvin.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a division where it's not a lot of drama that's going to be in like the East, and especially the National League West, guys. This, to me, is the most competitive division. You have the Rockies, the Diamondbacks, the Dodgers, and the Giants. I mean, you know, San Diego sucks. They're always going to suck. But, I mean, this is going to be a division, guys. It's hard to predict. I'm going to pick the Dodgers because they have pitching. They have some great pitching. and they have some talent. They can hit the ball as well, but the Giants aren't going to go down, you know, quietly. So Jonathan, I'm going out on a limb here, and I'm picking the Dodgers, man, just because of that pitching staff.
Well, if I could go back to the Central real quick, Milwaukee's weakness is that all five of their pitchers are fastballs or home runs. That's going to be their difference. But coming to the NL West, I mean, Colorado doesn't have the pitching staff. Let's just start there. The Dodgers, the team who become the Yankees of the West, you got to love it. You got Clayton Kershaw, who has just been lights out. You got a great catcher in Ellis. You know, good first baseman in Gonzalez. You know, Crawford's coming around. Kemp's pretty good if he can get going. Ethier's good, but he needs Kemp to get going. The problem with the Dodgers is Chad Billingsley. They really don't have a number four pitcher, you know. And they're placing a lot of everything on Hyunjin Ryu, who is kind of an unproven commodity, you know. And I mean, he's looked all right in his games this year, but he's still one of those guys we really don't know how a full season's going to handle him. And their bullpen can really just be a disaster. I don't know how I can, Giants are my number two team. And that has everything to do with Barry Bonds and him being my favorite player growing up. So, looking at the Giants, I'm going to lean their way because they've been there before. They've done it. But they need to right this ship early because Kane's looking rough. Lincecum has lost all velocity in his fastball. Everybody's sitting on him. Those bats better start producing. I mean, Buster Posey and Brandon Belt have looked terrible so far.
Yeah, I think the Giants are done, guys. I'm not on that bandwagon this year, but thanks for referencing Barry Bonds. He's my all-time favorite baseball player, guys. So thanks, Jonathan, for that. Trey, who do you like in this division?
So, Jonathan, are you going with the Dodgers as well? Is that what I got from that?
No, going with the Giants.
Giants, okay. Well, Jonathan, I am not a Giants fan. I've never been a Giants fan, and I absolutely loathe Barry Bonds. But here's the thing about this. This is not the Barry Bonds Giants, And you failed to mention something for your Giants. I think they went through the first five starts without giving up an earned run by the starters, and that was including Lincecum. So, you know, that's saying something. And not only that, but they have a new frontline starter, and he is far better than Lincecum is right now. And then Matt Cain is not that guy. It's, you know, and Jonathan, who am I talking about? Come on, be a fan for me.
So, Trey,
are you talking about Bum or are you talking about Bogey?
That's right, Bumgarner, yeah. So, I mean, this guy is Dylan Tarvin. I really like what he's anchoring. He is not Clayton Kershaw, but he's pretty close. I think he's going to really have a great season. I think he's going to be up for the Cy Young Award by the end of the year. So, Tarvin, I like the Giants roster. I think they have that it factor, and I still don't like the fact that you have all these ex-Red Sox players who caused just such a ruckus in Boston, and they come to L.A. and they didn't do anything at the end of last year. I worry about team chemistry, you know, with the Dodgers. So I'm picking the Giants, the world champions, to win this division.
That's a good point you brought up. But I think now we have a lot more games now for them. They had the off season to get it right. Now they have a whole 162 games to get it right. I think they will win this division by at least five games. I think the Dodgers are for real this year. They will take care of
Tarvin, when's the last time a team was successful with a four-pitcher rotation? The Rockies tried to do it last year and completely collapsed.
Yeah, but you got look at the talent on that Dodgers team, though, the hitters. I mean, you're giving up a little bit with the pitchers, but if you can score runs, that's where it's going to come into play at. Okay, so your fourth starter, fifth starter sucks, or maybe it's not. Eventually, they're going to get some wins because of those hitters can hit the long ball, they can score a lot of runs. So I don't think that's really what I'm looking at. I'm not looking at that as much as I am the talent, you know, being able to hit the ball. You know, how long is it going to be before Hanley Ramirez comes back?
He will be back in 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's very important for them to
you know, to stay up there, not to be too far back when he comes back. I think he's going to come out and have a monster year this year. I think he's tired of being kicked. So, guys, you guys are against me. I'm going to beat both of you in these three picks right here. I'm going to recap. I have the Braves. I'm going to go ahead and say the Cardinals, guys, just because y'all like the Reds. And I'm going to say the Dodgers. So, I'll at least win two out of those three. So,
no, you won't.
Let's move on to the American League right quick.
Well, Tarvin, before we move into the American League, Tarvin, who are your two wild cards coming out of the National?
Okay, I'm going to pick the Washington Nationals as a wild card team, and I'm going to pick the San Francisco Giants as a wild card.
Well, Tarvin, I got the Dodgers and Braves, so, I mean, that pretty much amounts to the exact same postseason, pretty much, except for you taking the Cardinals.
Yeah,
and I hopefully an infield fly rule won't cost the Braves, you know, this year. Even though that was the correct call, hopefully they'll be able to win this time. So, Jonathan, who's your wild card?
Oh, I got to go with the Dodgers and the Braves, but do not sleep on the Diamondbacks.
Okay, that's especially Prado's there. You know, Prado can drive in some runs, score some runs. That's a big pickup by Arizona. So, guys, let's go to the American League East. And I'm not surprised that the Yankees are 2-4 right now. I think this is that year where the Yankees are just going to have to accept, all the Yankees fans out there, that they're not that good. And looking at Toronto in this division, guys, I really think that this team, with their offseason moves, acquisitions, I think this team could win this division. So, Trey, am I off saying Toronto could win the East?
Well, I mean, are you saying they could, or are you saying they are?
I'm saying they could. They.
Sure they could, Tarvin. Sure they could. This is possible. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I'm going to pick Toronto to win this division, guys.
Oh.
I'm picking Toronto. I'm not very impressed with Boston, really. Baltimore, you know, they just don't have the pitching in my mind. Tampa Bay's Tampa Bay. The Yankees are going to be down. So I think this is a perfect year. And I talked to a buddy of mine earlier, too, about Toronto. I mean, these guys do have it together. I'm going to pick the Jays and the East guys. I know y'all are laughing at me, Jonathan. Who are you going to pick?
Well, you know, I'm going to go with my Rays. Pitching. We have, it looks like our bats are starting to come together. We still have Ben Zobrist, who is one of the best players in the game right now. And, yeah, I'm not going to pick the same Toronto that lost to Cleveland twice and then lost to Boston twice, including 13-0. The dream team in Toronto is not going to make it. No, I mean, R.A. Dickey does not look the same already. You know, Mark Buehrle is aged.
Josh Johnson, he's come back from arm injuries. I could care less. It's Josh Johnson.
Okay, look at the bullpen. Who do you feel comfortable with out of that bullpen?
Not really anybody.
Well, there we go. But
I'm telling you guys, the reason I'm picking the Jays is because I'm looking at everybody else. That's what I'm looking at. I'm just going out on a limb. I'm looking at the Yankees. You know they're not going to make it. Red Sox, they're not going to make it, in my opinion. But Baltimore, I mean, it's just because of who's weak in that division now. And that's why I'm picking it the way I am. I mean, they have a shot. Toronto can hit the long ball. You know, they're 2-4 right now. They got beat 13-0. That's one game, and that's six games out of the year. Let's just see in about 2 months from now where they are. So I'm sure y'all, we'll be talking, you guys will be bowing down to me at that time.
You're high.
Nathan Walters online, Tarvin, has Baltimore winning the division. So I'm about to make it the fourth different team prediction. So let me tell you about the East and why I have problems with Toronto first. They came in with it. They had all these big free agent acquisitions. The problem is they're obviously anchored by a couple of veteran dudes, you know, 37-year-old R.A. Dickey, who's 0-2 this year, who did get lit up. His knuckleball isn't moving the way it did in the past. Josh Johnson is an injury concern. You already have some, you know, Melky Cabrera's on this team. You know, he's not looking all that great now that he's off the juice. So
Jose Reyes,
yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, this is a roster that could absolutely make a playoff run, and I would expect that the Blue Jays are going to be in the wild card contention. Now, Jonathan, you know I love the Rays, but there's not a team that will make the postseason with James Loney as their first baseman. So unless that app changes and they get a DH, the Rays will not have – they're going to be – here's my prediction for the Rays, and it hurts me to say this, Marvin, but they're going to be no hit twice this year at least. They got no hit twice last year. That's not going to change. Their hitting has gotten worse than it was last year. They didn't make any good improvements. Now, if Jennings is – they're hoping that Jennings becomes the player that they think he can be. Other than that, they really don't have anybody right now in that lineup that scares you as a pitcher. I mean, a front line or a second line or a third line pitcher can shut them out. So that's going to be the problem for the Rays. And oh, by the way, they got beat 13-0 themselves today, Jonathan. So, I mean, that was by, guess who, the Cleveland Indians. So
I was ignoring that.
Yeah, and that was David Price, by the way, the Cy Young winner. So the Rays have a lot of problems, and if David Price doesn't go out and shut somebody out, they're going to give up runs. And I love what Alex Cobb did, and he looked great. So I mean, their pitching is going to be good this year, and it's going to keep them in a lot of ball games. But those ball games are going to be a lot of 3-1 games. They're on the losing end of them. So Tarvin, you talked about the Red Sox. I actually have liked what I've seen. Middlebrooks is looking incredible. He had 3 home runs today. I'm picking the Red Sox to win this division. Lester is 2-0. He's looking great coming back and healthy. If they can get even more healthy, they got some guys who are still coming back. I mean, Tarvin, this team can be very dangerous and very underrated because a lot of these guys on the Red Sox team, like Shane Victorino, they picked up, a really good player who most people don't think is a star, but this guy can go out and hit 20 home runs, steal 20 bases, score 100 runs. I like adding him to this lineup. And by the way, Jacoby Ellsbury looks healthy. So, Tarvin, I like what the Red Sox are doing. Not a Red Sox fan, but I think they're going to win this division.
Well, you see them 4-2 on the road so far, top of the division. They have yet to play a home game, which I think actually Boston might do better on the road this year than at home, Jonathan. But looking at this division, who did you say, Tampa Bay? You said Tampa Bay, right, Jonathan?
I can't go against my Rays. We have a great pitching staff. We have a good bullpen. The bats are going to come together. We're using more for rotation in the infield other than Longoria. As long as Longoria stays healthy and Zobrist keeps being Zobrist, we'll be all right. You know, I mean, we won 90 games last year.
Looking in the chat room, Nathan Walters had the wild cards back, the Braves and the Dodgers. I'm trying to go up. I think I missed it. I had to go off the chat room just 1 second. Cuervo. He had the Braves and the Cardinals, right, Trey?
Well, that was, Nathan did, and Cuervo and Nathan both have Baltimore winning
okay.
the East. And I'll tell you, Tarvin,
okay.
I think Baltimore is a very, very good pick. You know, I actually almost picked them because they are probably the second most complete team in the AL East. I mean, they have Matt Wieters is looking fantastic. He's looking like he's coming into his own. And if they get production out of Chris Davis like they've gotten so far in week one, which I don't think will continue, but, I mean, they didn't expect to get that. I mean, the problem with the Orioles is Brian Roberts got hurt again, but they had a lot of young pitching, so, you know, you're still developing that. They did well last year, but there's just too many X factors for the Orioles. This is why I picked the Red Sox over them. I just think that the Orioles are still developing a little bit. I think the Orioles are going to be right there for the postseason, though.
All right, guys, let's move to the Central real quick. I mean, looking at this division, I mean, it's going to be tight. There's a couple of teams that's going to keep it tight. We have the Sox right now, top 4-2. Minnesota's 4-2. Cleveland 3-3. Detroit 3-3. Kansas City 3-3. Guys, I'm still looking at this division. It's Justin Verlander's division. I really like him and Miguel Cabrera to take care of business. Detroit is in a class of their own. Hopefully, Trey, it won't take them as long to win it as it did last year because we went down to the wire, I believe.
Yeah.
So the White Sox will be – Twins can be there, but I'm going to go with Detroit, guys. So, Trey, who do you like in this division?
Yeah, Torin, this is the most improved division in, I think, all of baseball. I've actually – when you look at what Kansas City and Hosmer and Moustakas, you're like, okay, well, these guys are young. They got James Shields now. I mean, they even Kansas City could make some noise. I mean, we don't, you know, really young team. You know, you get Detroit, who looks like the obvious favorite. Cleveland made a lot of moves. Minnesota's the one team, I think, that really doesn't belong in the playoff talk right now, even though Morneau is healthy and it looks like he's back. I just don't think they have the pitching for it. So, Tarvin, I agree with you, although I think the White Sox are going to be right there the entire year. I think Kansas City is sort of an X factor here. I'm also going with Detroit just because I think, you know, Cabrera and Fielder are going to be too much with Verlander down the stretch. I think that the Tigers have to solve their closer situation, which is, yeah, you know, whether it's going to be Benoit or they're going to bring up Rondon, their big flamethrower, or whether they're going to let Valverde have it again, which I think would be the biggest mistake of the three of those players. But if they can figure that out, Carvin, they'll be okay. If not, this division will come open.
If you have Valverde as your closer, you're going to blow about 50 saves this year. So I hope to God that they don't use him. Jonathan, are you seeing anything different in this division, a team that we should look out for?
Well, Detroit's the obvious pick. Cleveland's pitching's too young, too inexperienced. Kansas City was built for 2016, and they sold that future when they gave us Ordozi, Montgomery, and Myers. I don't think James Shields and Wade Davis are enough for Kansas City. The White Sox are a good ball club, but Paul Konerko is not the same player. Trey's right, Minnesota does not belong. What they're doing there at 4-2, I don't know. But between Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer, and then Prince Fielder and Miguel Cabrera, Detroit should win this division by at least 10 games.
Wow, that's a lot of games. I don't think it'll be – they should, you're right. But the White Sox seem to always just hang around. Just they're always right there, you know, right in the lead or just a couple games back. So we're all picking Detroit in this division, so we're finally on the same page. I think this is the next division, guys, is the division we're not going to be on the same page on. Very strong division. The West, we have Oakland right now at 5-2, Texas at 3-2, Seattle 3-4, the Angels 2-3, and Houston 1-5. I mean, how many games will Hamilton's family be at when they play Texas again? Will depend, you know, how they do right now. So, guys, tell me right now, Trey, who do you like in this division? I mean, this is a tough one. This is a very tough division.
Yeah, it's a tough division. You know, obviously the Angels spent, you know, like $1 billion in the offseason. So, you know, they're a sexy pick. But, you know, you got to look at what the Rangers have done the last 3 years and think, well, you know, they seem to have a lot of chemistry on that team still. They seem to have a lot of guys on that team who can still play ball. And then you look at what Seattle did, and you think, well, you know, Kendry Morales has been playing. He's now healthy. He's been looking good. You know, you got Felix Hernandez anchoring that staff. You know, what can they do? And then, you know, obviously the Angels have a lot of young pitching. And, man, Tarvin, some of those dudes look real good. Brett Anderson is looking good this year. You know, 1-1, but he was actually in his first start. You get robbed by Felix Hernandez, who threw a gem. So, you know, A.J. Griffin, I mean, you got some guys in Oakland staff, you know, Tommy Malone, who actually could win 15 games apiece. I mean, they're that good. You just don't know it yet. So this division, again, Houston going to lose a lot. They're going to lose 100, 115 games, and that's going to mean a lot because I think you're going to have two teams come out of this division for the postseason. And who those two are is going to be very tough to call. But I'm going to go with the Angels starting to win the division, mostly because I really do think Pujols is going to have a really resurgent year. I'm still not sold on Josh Hamilton this year. I think he's going to have a down year. I mean, I know he's started in a very big swamp, but Hamilton started, he's a slow starter, so it's not too surprising. But I think Pujols, with just having him in the lineup, is going to have a big year, Carter.
Jonathan?
The Angels have Weaver and Wilson, and then crap. And Joe Bland, Tommy Hansen, and Jason Vargas are their other three starters. There's a problem. Mark Trumbo is somebody who disappeared after the All-Star break. Josh Hamilton has seen his swing, his strikeout rate increase every year. Josh Hamilton's getting worse, and that's to be expected. Kiospo is defensive third. We're expecting a lot out of the Angels. I don't think they win the division. Seattle, with the new dimension of the ballpark, Seattle is a very interesting pick, but Joe Saunders, Blake Beavin, and Brandon Maurer kind of kill that. Texas is interesting. I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to change what I said. And they, yeah, you know what? No, I'm going to go with Oakland to win the division.
I am as well. I like Oakland's pitching. I talked to Cuervo, too. He had that same pick as Oakland. The pitching staff for Oakland, guys, is good. And they're consistent. They have a good chemistry with them. I'm tired of these teams, you know, like the Angels trying to make these all-star teams. And Texas is good, but I'm worried about their pitching as well, even though Darvish had a good game the other night. I'm with Jonathan on this, Trey, and I know it probably surprises you, both of us. We're picking Oakland in this division. It's going to be a great race, but I just think they have the pitching to get it done.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, Oakland, their big problem is where do the hits come from against anybody's front line? I mean, that's the big question I have for Oakland. You know, Coco Crisp is not the guy who's going to, you know, really scare you. I mean, you know, what's the big line of threat they have? And that's the problem I have with picking Oakland. I mean, again, they're going to be in a lot of tight ball games because they have really phenomenal starting pitching, but they also have bullpen trouble. So, you know, I'm not sold on their back end either. So, you know, Oakland, really young team, Farvin. You know, Billy Beane ball still. I'd love to see Oakland make some noise, and I think they will. I think their starting pitching is going to be very good this year.
Now the tough question is, who are the two wild cards in this? So when I'm looking at it, I'm going to pick. I'm going to pick the Angels as one wild card. This is tough, guys. I'll pick the it could be two out of the same division, couldn't it? It could be Texas and the Angels as wild cards. So
yeah,
looking at it, I see what I'm going to pick as my wild card. I think we're going to have three teams out of the West make the playoffs.
Wow.
Jonathan?
Baltimore's luck and one-run games has to run out. You know, so I really can't lean that way. Boston's young. I'm not entirely sold on Bradley Jr. and Middlebrooks being able to last the whole year. Ellsbury has a hard time staying healthy, as much as I like him. You know, it's very, very, very conceivable. We see the Angels, somebody get in. Along with Texas and Oakland, we could see all three out of the West. We really could. You know, Oakland needs to watch Josh Reddick's injury to his wrist because that would be a huge loss. Jed Lowry's playing well, but Jed Lowry can't stay healthy. Texas is pitching iffy. The American League, I think, other than the Central, is the most wide open we've seen in a while.
Yeah. Trey, who's yours? Who's your two?
I missed who Jonathan was picking.
I picked three out of the West. I went with Oakland, Texas, and L.A.
Okay.
So Texas and L.A.
All right. Well, Tarvin, you know, I think that, you know, the Astros are going to give up a lot of games this year, so... You know, the whole shot, it may come from two of those teams. It very well could be. But I just think that's unlikely. I think that, you know, you're going to have a battle that's going to come down to it. I think Baltimore is still, you know, I talked about them, you know, and they're being very close to Boston. I think they're going to be a wild card this year out of the AL East. I still think two teams come out of there. I think the second team will come out of the West, although I think that you're going to have a race between several teams in the West. You know, I think the A's are going to be very close. I think the Rangers are a little bit better of a team. And you know, Josh Reddick's injury, I wonder how long he's going to be out. And the A's cannot lose their only home run hitter. So I think that, you know, Rangers get the wild card. So I got the Rangers and the Orioles.
Okay. Well, guys, we will talk more about baseball. Trust me. I mean, this is a long season. It's going to be exciting to see which teams, you know, actually fall apart and which teams actually, you know, get that chemistry and ride it all the way, you know, through the all-star break into the playoffs. I'm excited about this baseball season. I think the Braves could make some noise, like we said earlier, but we have just a few minutes left, and I want to touch on something in college football then. You know, I'm an Auburn fan. Y'all know that.
you know, I'm an Auburn Tiger man, but these allegations, I just want to get y'all's opinion on it. You know my opinion. I think a lot of it is just a witch hunt right now on Auburn, but the SEC in general. I think they're trying to just pick Auburn apart. And, Trey, you're a lawyer and everything, and I want your opinion first on this. You know, the spice, the synthetic marijuana that they were talking about the Auburn players using, at the time it wasn't illegal. It wasn't a banned substance. It was over-the-counter, I believe. And a lot of people are saying Auburn covered that up, which the AD and the president came out and showed proof that they were actually discussing it with the kids, called the parents like 500 times trying to discuss it with them. So looking at this, could Auburn get in trouble for kids using a drug that wasn't banned?
Well, I mean, let's start off with, depending on when they use it, and I haven't nailed down the specific allegations, pardon, but that's going to be key, because spice was banned by the DEA in an emergency ban back in 2010. So, you know, I don't know when these allegations start, but, you know, it's not like spice wasn't illegal. I mean, at some point, the DEA did put on the emergency ban, and then later on it was added to the actual list.
It wasn't added to the NCAA until 2011, I believe, August, around that time, maybe. So I don't know about the emergency. I know what you're talking about, but I don't think the NCAA made it an illegal substance till that time.
Right, but my point is, Darvin, is the NCAA doesn't have to tell me that something's illegal. There's a DEA that tells me things are. That's where we get the bans from, is the DEA scheduling list. So, you know, that's part of it. But, you know, here's my bifurcated answer is the same. You should have the same reaction to any of these allegations to any school, and that never happens with fans. So, you know, Miami has allegations. You know, SEC fans come out and say, oh, hang on, death penalty. I remember that conversation. And nothing was really proved yet. It was still an investigation. I have the exact same opinion that I have about that I do now, which is, let's see what actually happens. Let's not jump on the bandwagons, because there's always multiple sides to a story. And generally speaking, when the media puts something out, it's usually not as bad as they say it is. So, you know, I think there are problems with the story. I think a lot of Penn State fans thought there were problems with the report that came out of there. I didn't agree with them. Once the report came out, we get to see all the evidence. But I'm still not seeing all the evidence I would like to see in this investigation. So there are more facts, but I'll tell you, Tarvin, there are some concerns that I have when I look through what I saw, which is not a whole lot. I mean, we still don't know a lot about what's going on. But there is some stuff that Auburn obviously should have done if those facts are true. But now, what does this all equate to, Tarvin? I don't know. And that's the problem is we are off into an area which is a little bit, you know, because this was spice. And, you know, spice, you know, was a little bit hard to figure out what it was. And believe me, I know way more about spice than probably any of you guys do, because I had to prosecute and defend it in the military. So there's about 1,000 different variations of spice. So
how long, Trey? I want to talk about Nathan Walters in the chat room. Said, you know, about the witch hunt, why would they pick Auburn? They're not even relevant. But look, Auburn's been being picked on, and I know you guys know, you watch college football. If you watch college football and have an IQ over 5, you realize that ever since Cam Newton came into the picture, that these guys have been questioning everything. It's just like, why is Auburn winning a championship? And Auburn is a relevant team. They were 3-9 last year. They sucked. I mean, there's no doubt. But I'm talking about overall, if you look at football in my lifetime, Auburn's a relevant football team. But now they're looking at Alabama. They're looking at the steroid usage. I'm just trying to put this in a Homer, Nebraska, Nathan Walters is, you know, message here. Just reading it, Nathan, come on, dude. If you think Nebraska's relevant more than Auburn, then you're crazy right now. But it is a witch hunt over in the SEC, guys. They're going to try to bring down Bama, LSU, anybody they can, because the country's tired of hearing about it. But, Jonathan, let's flip over to you real quick. What do you think about these allegations?
Well, spice is the same drug that Tyron Mathieu, the honey badger, got suspended for at LSU before those marijuana tests came to light. He did get suspended a game for a synthetic marijuana called And Trey, I know just about as much as about Spice as you do, unfortunately, because I have a friend who passed away from uses of it. So you kind of educate yourself once that happens. You know, my problem with this whole thing is you had the reporter, you know, whoever the writer of the story was, I can't remember who it was, has all these quotes from Auburn players who are now backing down and saying that's not what they really said. Well, if you really, I mean, are you mad at the university? Is that why you said it at the time? I mean, man up and actually say, you know, man up to what you said, if that's what you really said. You know, that's my biggest deal with this. Do I think Auburn should get in trouble? No. Do I think Penn State should have gotten in trouble for the whole thing, for the football program side of it? No. Do I think Miami should get in trouble? Probably. All right. You know, I mean, you know, this is kind of coming back to the whole Cam Newton ordeal, where it seems like the NCAA couldn't nail Auburn then, so they're going to try and nail him now. I don't know if this is an SEC witch hunt, but I think this might be an Auburn witch hunt because the SEC the NCAA couldn't get him on Cam Newton.
Yeah, and still in the chat room saying he doesn't know why they would go after Auburn. I mean, they've been, Jonathan, you're exactly right. The NCAA got a black eye when they went in and made, ESPN came in and started talking about Cam Newton, this and that. He got off scot-free, and it just gave him a black eye. But here's the deal. If they go back in now, after this reporter, so-called reporter, goes in and finds it, how bad would it look if they came in now and punished Auburn? Wouldn't you ask the question, what did you and the FBI miss when you were there a year and a half investigating?
Well, I mean, Tarvin, yeah, you're going to ask those questions of why. Well, the part of this came out because of the dudes who got arrested for robbery. I mean, there's where some of the statements are coming from. There's where some of the evidence, I mean, generally speaking, you know, when you have bad apples in your organization, it's not the people who aren't getting in trouble who blow the whistle off of these things. It's not your center who's a, you know, 4.0 athlete, you know, who's going to break open the story about all your dudes who are using spice and, you know, marijuana. It's going to be the dude who got arrested for robbery, who's smoking joints with all of them. That's where you get the evidence from. That's how any drug ring goes down. I mean, ask any prosecutor or defense attorney, like, what's the best way to get to attack a drug ring? You know, grab one person out of it and tell us who you smoked with. You know, who are you with? Who is selling? So that's where this evidence is starting to come from, which they didn't have then. But, you know, still there are a lot of questions. I disagree with you completely. There's an SEC witch hunt, and because, I mean, there's a lot about you know, thousands and thousands of Miami fans who would completely disagree with you and think there's a Miami witch hunt. And there's a bunch of people who would say there's a Penn State witch hunt. So,
not an SEC West, which I just, I mean, what I'm saying is there's so many people that hate the SEC now in general because that's all you hear about in football that I think they want Auburn to fall. I think they need Auburn to fall. And I think, you know, looking at Alabama, they'd love to see Alabama fall. They'd love to see LSU fall. But this is all about, it's not that Auburn is so great, Nathan. I wasn't saying that. I'm saying that they are a relevant team. I mean, they just won a national championship in 2010. So just looking at that, I think that's relevant, don't you guys? If you won a national championship just a couple of years ago. So I'm not talking about Kentucky here. I'm talking about, you know, Auburn. So 3-9 team last year sucks, but it's all about that Cam Newton. It's all about Auburn shouldn't have won that national championship, people say. How in the world did Auburn win a national championship? They're an 8-9 win team usually, and all of a sudden they won a national championship. That black eye is right there with NCAA, and I want to get Cuervo's opinion real quick. Cuervo, what do you think about this?
Well, guys, I mean, I don't think it's really attacking one specific program. I think it is a conference thing, but at the same time, though, I think, too, it's also, hey, these reporters, their job is to find stories, and any little thing that they can find to report on, and I think with the fact that it's the University of Auburn, an SEC school, was just kind of, that was the bonus for them. And now it just seems, it makes it look like, well, you know, it's attack on the SEC. I'm sure if it was, you know, any other BCS conference type school, you know, it'd be the same deal. But I think it's a little different because of the fact that it's the SEC. And a lot of people feel that, you know, any little thing to try and bring the conference down because of their success, you know, they're going to do what they can. So I just think it all comes down to, you know, these guys have to find stories, and you know, it just so happens that that it's University of Auburn this time.
Yeah, Auburn University. I mean, it's, look, guys, it's just, if you have evidence on Auburn, and these guys did that, I'm all for, hey, let's take away that championship for Auburn for 2010. I'm a big Auburn fan. And I would tell you, if they paid Cam Newton, and they had proof of paying Cam Newton, I would say forfeit that championship. If they made Michael Dyer's grades pass, made him pass instead of fail to play that game, I say forfeit that championship. I'm not one of those people that's for breaking rules, even though it's my school. But what I'm tired of seeing is people trying to take the word of a guy about to go to prison for the rest of his life for armed robbery, trying to say that he was using spice and the coaches did nothing about it, and him using spice is why he went and armed robbed someone. That's what I'm tired of seeing. I'm tired of people saying Auburn paid Cam Newton or Auburn did this without proof. And I would say that about any team. If it was Alabama, if it was Georgia, if it was Tennessee, if it was Nebraska, I don't want to see teams get hammered and verbally, you know, just killed in the media without any proof. And I think ESPN dropped the ball big time by running this story. And look, I'm going to tell you, I think probably Cam Newton did get some money, you know, to come to Auburn. But if you cannot prove that, then how can you really punish someone? And that's where I'm at. There will not be any proof that Auburn cheated or did anything because there's none out there. They did not change grades. I would be shocked if Gene Chizik changed grades for kids. I would not be shocked if players were paid money, you know, but I would be shocked for that because these boosters can come out there and do things. And do you think that Will Muschamp paid Mike McNeil $400, Cuervo? Probably, I do. But how can you prove that?
Well, and that's the kicker, right, is you can't. Unless you have video evidence, which I seriously doubt they do, it's always going to be the he said, she said game. And, I mean, I can say I robbed a bank last night, but if nobody can prove it, then it didn't happen. So, but I have a closet full of money. So which one is it? And, I mean, it is all about the proof. I mean, he said, she said all we want. You know, just like the Rutgers story. You know, you guys were talking about Rutgers earlier. If it wasn't for the video evidence, we could sit here all day and talk about, well, did the coach throw basketballs at these kids? Did the coach say these things about these kids? We would argue all day, well, I think it happened. Well, I don't think it happened. But because of the fact that there's video evidence that shows that that's what that idiot did, then there's your proof. So, did Michael Dyer fail classes at Auburn? We don't know. Did Cam Newton get paid to, you know, play? We don't know. We there's a lot of things we don't know. So, unless there's proof, it's just going to be whatever you want to believe.
See, I mean, after going 3-9, that was hard enough. But to now still hear this same stuff go over and over again, it's like, why? I mean, why not go somewhere else? I mean, Miami, you know, they blatantly broke these rules. We have proof of that, they do. But the problem is the NCAA dropped the ball. And, hey, I want to bring Nathan on, if he's still there, to get his opinion on this. I can't let him not talk about, you know. What's up, Nathan?
Hey, what's up, Tarvin? I'm enjoying our little conversation here in the chat room. I'm having a good time with this.
I do see your point, though, about the relevance. You're right. I mean, if you were coming after a team individual right now in the SEC, it would be someone that's actually better than 3-9. I get your point on that. But I'm just saying back since 2010, it's just like that's all I've heard. You know, being an Auburn fan, that's all you hear. Even if you're 1-11, we'd still hear the same thing. I don't think that 2010 championship is coming down. And Nathan, it's because I don't think they have any kind of proof, any kind of credible witnesses to back this up. A guy that's about to go to prison for armed robbery is not your most credible witness.
And I would agree with you there as well. I also don't think that Auburn's going to lose their championship 2010. This is not USC 2004, where there was
mountains of evidence piled up before the investigators from the NCAA in regards to Reggie Bush and other players that played for the Trojans. This is a completely different thing. This is where people wanted this witch hunt to happen in 2010. It was a witch hunt then with Cam Newton, and they wanted this. They really wanted to go after this school, and you could tell. It was all over everything because that's what they wanted it to be, and the media was like, made this conflagration really happen back, you know, two and a half years ago, and it's a shame that it really continued to Auburn now. Now, I will say this as well. I'm in the middle of what's going on right now. I hear that there are multiple people coming out and saying things about the previous coaching staff at Auburn. I need to get all of what I know together, and then I actually want to see if there is some substantial evidence here for what is happening. Now, with the substances and things like that, now we all know that things like this happen at every university and that even the moderators from every university can't stop everything bad from happening, no matter if people say they're Notre Dame and they're the God's gift to the world. No, that stuff happens there as well. But this kind of seems to what I'm saying right now, and of course you and I have banter back and forth, and I love Nebraska as much as anybody does, their team. But if there were serious, substantiated claims against the University of Nebraska from multiple players, and that there was actual, like I said, the word substantiated is huge right here, to where it's actually real evidence that things like this have happened, because these are actually pretty serious allegations, then I'm certain like you, would say, yeah, something needs to happen here. This isn't like 2010 where there's nothing at all. People just want something to happen. Do I think the media is out of line with continue to propagate this call it a witch hunt to Auburn if you want to? Because yet again, no, there's no reason to attack Auburn right now. I mean, they're in enough of a jam right now with what they have going on with their program. They don't need anything extra.
Nothing. We don't need all this. We're trying to, you know, to get everybody back on the right page. But look, I mean, the problem I have is media these days, and we could do it. I'm not ESPN or anything. I could sit over here and tell lies and stuff, and that would be okay because I'm not ESPN. But when you're taking sources from people that just started their own blog, I mean, the lady just destroyed the Duke lacrosse team, the reputation, and then she left town, never to be seen with them again. Something needs to be done with that. But, you know, Auburn can't sue this lady or anybody talking about them, because once you do sue someone, then you're under oath, and then the truth could come out. They could dig something else out of the closet. So Auburn's doing the right thing here by shutting up. But, hey, guys, I'm telling you, if this stuff is true about the cheating and all this, hey, strip that title away. I don't want to be a part of it. You know, I don't want to be a part of that. And I'm sure, Trey, you'd be the same about Florida State, right?
I disagree with you on stripping titles. I've never liked stripping titles. I think it's stupid. We all can remember that game. I mean, just like I can all remember Reggie Bush winning the Heisman, but you take it away and you act like it didn't happen. You know, okay. But, you know, if it happens, I'm all for sanctions and probation. Yeah, I'm all for that. But I'll be honest, I don't care if it happened, Tarvin. I wouldn't be on the bandwagon to give up, to take the title away.
But if Auburn made that, I mean, honestly, that game, I mean, Cam Newton was good and Michael Dyer was the MVP. If Cam Newton was paid money illegally and Michael Dyer's grades were fixed to get to that game, I can't honestly see how you would call Auburn the national champion.
Well, they won the game, Tarvin. I mean, that's all I can say. I just don't like stripping titles.
Okay. Cuervo?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of it either, Brian. I mean, it's kind of like, piggybacking off what Trey said, it's kind of like the game never happened. Or you might as well say, okay, well, we're going to award Oregon the national championship. As an Auburn fan, I mean, how would that make you feel? Knowing that you know your team won, but because of some, you know, story that came out, it's like, okay, now Oregon's the national championship for 2010. It's like it takes away from the season that your team has. You know,
It's like a Little League World Series when that 18-year-old was pitching in a 12-year-old game. I mean, really, they weren't the champions, you know. I mean, Auburn was playing. If all this is true, with illegal players that should not be on the field and were not eligible to be on the field,
that's when I say, okay, I would give it to Oregon. In my mind, I would say, would Auburn have beaten Oregon without Cam Newton and Michael Dyer? And the answer is God, no. It wouldn't even been a game. So that's why I would say the stripping's okay. Southern Cal got their title stripped. Would they have won without Reggie Bush? No, not a chance. And I think, Nathan, am I wrong on this?
I'm kind of split on this because I'm also being in the Big Ten, having to kind of go through with what's going on with Penn State right now, to where these students today, these athletes today, I do still call them student athletes. I know that any more often than not, there's somebody for them either. But where these athletes today are being punished for things that have happened since 1998. So I think that things like that right now, what's happening at Penn State, that it's extremely harsh for the students. And I don't know if I would have gone that far. And the NCAA kind of lowered the hammer against them. I think they were really trying to make a statement more than anything else. But, would USC have beaten Oklahoma, 55-13 or whatever it was, without Reggie Bush? Probably. Yeah, they would have beat them then because they were a better team. They were a great team in 2004. That's where I think that, even when the Heisman Trophy, but it's kind of tough because going back in time, if you will, right now and saying, okay, well, 2010, would they have beaten Mississippi State Auburn? Would they have come from behind and beaten Alabama without Cam Newton? Would they have won these close games that they pulled out? The correct answer to that is no. There's no way ever. Like Cam Newton caught a touchdown pass. I think it was because Mississippi State, where I was like, are you serious right now? So, Cam Newton was the face and the reason that Auburn won the national championship in 2010. He's got a Heisman Trophy to prove it. He's got all these tons of awards. I think that at that point I agree with you that because he was a substantial reason why Auburn, won the national championship in 2010, I think that yes, you would go back and take that title away. I'm surprised because Trey and I usually agree on everything, but this is something where we disagree because I would, because of the face that Auburn had in 2010 with Cam Newton and of course with Dyer. I think that it'd be appropriate to strip the title away.
Yeah, Jonathan.
I'm with Trey. I do not believe in stripping titles. The teams that played that day, they earned their right to get there, and the team that won earned that victory. I don't think you can take that away, and in all honesty, you really can't, because they're still going to have the rings, they're still going to have the memories, the tape's still going to be out there. Yeah. You can't tell me that Reggie Bush didn't win that Heisman and USC didn't beat Oklahoma 55-19. I watched that game. It was an embarrassing game to watch because I was rooting for Oklahoma that night, which I never do. This is all, it's all been very, very, very tough to actually come down on one side or another on this whole thing, without being a fan. And I think that in all honesty, you shouldn't try and take something away from the 119 other guys that busted their butts and, blood, sweat, and tears for that ring. You can't do that. I don't care if Cam Newton murdered the three quarterbacks ahead of him to start. I don't care. I don't care if he got the dean's daughter knocked up and didn't take care of the child. He played hell. He was a hell of a player on the field, and that's his championship. You can't take that away. You can levy probation. Maybe hit them with a couple, you lose five scholarships, you lose a scholarship year over the next 5 years. But
I don't have a problem with Cam Newton being paid because I think a lot of people are getting paid in college football.
Oh, God,
right now. My problem is if you change someone's grade, their student athlete, like Nathan said, he said it perfectly, if you change that grade to make him eligible for a game that he should never have played in, maybe you don't strip the title, but there should be some kind of punishment for that because would Auburn beat Oregon without Dyer? I don't know. Would they have won without Cam Newton? God, no. Wasn't a chance. But But there are different levels and punishments and different things. I think cheating with grades is worse than getting paid because, A, everybody does it. And Cam Newton should have been on the field. He was 21 years old. It's not like he's playing 18-year-old baseball and he's 25, you know, or Little League baseball and he's 18. I just think it's just different on every circumstance. Should Alabama, if they got accused of, and it came down that they used steroids against LSU, Nathan, should they forfeit their title? I don't think so, you know, on that.
Steroids is such a loose term now because of everything legal when it comes to, you know, in performance-enhancing drugs. You know, I'm actually going to skip over one because when it comes to, like, I take a neutral stance on steroids across the board, especially when it comes to baseball. It doesn't make you any better at hitting a baseball. I take the stance that there was a high school here in Texas, which is just hilarious when things happen against anything in the state of Texas because of their inability to do anything right, and it's just funny to me because I dislike it. There was a high school basketball team that was undefeated, and they were in the state tournament, and it was found out that one of the players that was playing was 25 years old, and he, with his wife's help, of all things, had faked his own everything, transcript and everything, to get into this high school and played on this high school basketball team. And when he was found out, the high school basketball team had to forfeit their entire season, and they could not win anything. They could not continue the playoffs. So I think that's a completely different perspective, but I think that it resounds the most because that is, yet again, it's like a Cam Newton thing where without this 25-year-old, and that's also a complete lack of institutional control, Penn State, where they would not have been in the playoffs. They would not have been a great team. With Alabama and the steroids thing, I think we need more evidence for that as well. But I'm very, 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 very neutral when it comes to performance-enhancing drugs. I take a neutral road on that every single time.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
about that the 25-year-old player was he's from
Jonathan.
Jonathan,
we got
it.
2 minutes. Let's go.
That's
go ahead.
It.
Okay.
That 25-year-old player is from my hometown. So.
Oh, cool. Well, guys, I really enjoyed the conversation tonight. I hope everyone else did. It's fun when you can debate and do it respectfully. And, you know, we don't have, like the Paul Feinbaum show, we're not cussing each other out. So that's good. Nathan, thanks for joining us. Cuervo, Jonathan, Trey, Bruce is in the chat room. Hope you guys can come back for our show next Sunday night. We won't be doing a show this Wednesday night. We're just going to go to Sunday. Hope everybody can join us. Nathan, man, it was good to have you on the show tonight.
Yeah, it was great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
All right, take care, and kudos to Nebraska for that move they made yesterday. Y'all take care. Have a great week.